All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and oppressing you with your own money, broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico. I'm Dan, Taxation is Theft Berman, former president, former candidate for president. I like to say former president, former candidate for president of the United States, currently in the race for governor of Texas. And today I have with me the amazing Aria Mezzo, who just won a really awesome election. So we're going to talk about that. Really fun. But before we get started, of course, I want to take a quick minute to ask for your support. Head over to taxationistheft.info. And we actually have a really awesome contest going on right now. We're giving away the amazing Opener 3000. Now, if you haven't heard about this, you want to check it out. It's really amazing. It's amazing, and that's why it's called the Amazing Opener 3000. You may have seen it and noticed that it slightly resembles what might be an AR-15 receiver. It absolutely is not. Although, if you do win and we do ship it to you, we do have to send it to an FFL dealer because the government likes to regulate the shapes of things. But while you're there at taxationistheft.info, please support us by subscribing or buying something. Everything you do helps to support our efforts in providing counter-propaganda around the world against taxation so we can eliminate taxes for everybody. And now, on to the show. Aria, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Awesome. Doing pretty good. So now I'm, like, intrigued. Is that a server rack behind you? Sorry, I'm a nerd. I'm going to nerd out for a second.
I'm in the Facebook studio, the LRN studio. I actually can't tap into any of the equipment here because I've got my laptop, so I'm just having to use my cell phone, which, I mean, it frustrates me immensely knowing that, you know, there's this giant server rack behind me and vocal processing without any of it, but yes.
No worries. Well, it makes an awesome background anyways. So you won a really awesome election, and I saw the article come out about this, and I was just like, holy shit, that's so awesome.
I won a primary, right? Okay. And it's technically the losing election, but the election is on November the 3rd, and I hope to win that as well. But I did win the Cheshire County Sheriff for the Republican Party here in Cheshire County, New Hampshire.
Right. What made you decide to run? Did you see this as like a guaranteed win, or were you just kind of like, it was this a crapshoot for you?
Well, I ran as a libertarian in 2018 for the same position, for the sheriff of Cheshire County, because, you know, I'm well-trained in self-defense and de-escalation tactics. I'm a trans person from Mississippi. Those two things have been pretty critical to my survival over the years. So when it came time for us, we had all of these ballot spots and no one to put in them. I had just moved to New Hampshire, but they were like, hey, we have the sheriff's spot open. Would you like to run for it? I was like, you know what? This actually makes sense and I will run for it. But then the libertarians here in New Hampshire lost major party ballot access because of the performance of the governor candidate in 2018. So we went back to the drawing board here in Kane. We were like, okay, we want to continue running in elections. How can we most effectively do that? And the answer was to join the Republicans.
Nice. And that's so you had the support of the Libertarian Party in doing this.
Well, I don't know. I doubt it. I have support of libertarians in doing this. But I imagine there's a reason that, like, Nick Sarwark and Joe Jorgensen and Spike Cohen haven't come out and said, hey, yeah, we support this person. Because that whole party duopoly system that they're trying to break away from for some reason prevents the Libertarian Party, the third party, from being able to say, oh, yes, we do support this person. Screw your two-party system. Screw your bipartisanship. This is a person who stands for things we believe in. We support them. For whatever reason, they're not doing that. So I don't think I have the support of the Libertarian Party, but I do have the support of libertarians.
Awesome. Yeah, and that's because I was going to say that's a little bit unusual because even, you know, like my campaign was mostly about spreading this message and waking people up. And when I ran for president, I wasn't even spending most of my energy talking to libertarians because I was like, they're already libertarians. Who cares? But when I lost the nomination and I said I'm going to continue running as an independent, all these libertarians just got really pissed off at me because, you know, they want that. They want you like, oh, no, you have to stay a libertarian. You have to stay with us. You're either with us or against us, which is like, you know, the false dichotomy. So, but it's really awesome, I think, that you have that support. And maybe things would have been different if you still had ballot access and they would have, you know, said, oh, you have no reason to do that. But I think it's really, and it worked out really well.
It has worked out. It's sad that the Libertarian Party is so tied to its brand rather than being actually tied to libertarianism, because I'm as libertarian as anyone gets. I'm a full-blown voluntarist. The idea that the Libertarian Party would somehow just remain silent about me is kind of insulting, to be totally honest. That's a bit insulting because, as you said, they care more about the party, or as I said, they care more about the party brand than they do libertarianism. They care more about the, quote, Libertarian Party Incorporated than they do actually libertarian success. It's just like the Free State here in New Hampshire. They care more about Free State Incorporated or Free State Project Incorporated than they do the actual idea of having a free state. Right. And that's frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, and even so, it's interesting because we're always like on the verge of a Republican takeover of the Libertarian Party. Either like, I mean, in Texas, it was pretty overt. You've got people like Bill Weld coming in who, you know, people have different opinions, but he's more Republican.
He sucks. He's a Republican. He's a Republican and he sucks.
Right. But and for some reason, so isn't it like, okay, they're coming over here, like it's they're playing dirty politics. What's so wrong with sending a libertarian in to infiltrate the Democrats or Republicans, you know, to do something? Because I mean, like, what you're doing is like you've sabotaged their system. Like you're gonna be on their ballot in their place. They're not gonna have a Republican sheriff on the ballot because of you. They're going to have a libertarian, but you're going to have an R next to your name, which might get you. I don't know if is your current sheriff Republican or Democrat?
He's a Democrat.
Okay. So chances might not be.
Because of who I am, I expect to pull a lot of votes from the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And because I am pro gun and pro small taxes and pro low taxes and pro small government, I do also expect a lot of libertarians or Republicans who actually bother to look into me to actually vote for me. But the current incumbent is, in fact, a Democrat.
Right. Yeah. And the reason I say that is because most voters, they don't look into anybody, like, as you've proven. They just like, oh, I'm going to vote Republican. I mean, I know there's more people who look more into it. But yeah, it's just such such a shit show. You know, and to Arvin's Arvin made this really great point about the, you know, Arvin. The elections used to be the ballots used to be a blank piece of paper, and you would be forced to write in who you were going to vote for, and so it obligated everybody, like, okay, everybody knows who's running for president, so you could write that in. If you don't know who's running for Senate in your district, like, you're not going to you can't just check a box based on a party. Like, you have to be an informed voter, and I thought that was actually really brilliant. But of course, the Democrats and Republicans are in charge of everything, and that's like, no, we want people to just check our box. They don't need to know who we are.
Well, that's more or less what happened. You know, the Republicans went into the primary and they voted, and I was the only option there, so they voted for me. I don't know how they missed me, having run for city council in 2019 and running for the Libertarian sheriff candidacy in 2018. I don't know how so many well-educated, well-connected primary voters missed all of this, but evidently they did. And they went and they saw me there and they filled in the circle next to my name. And they were some of them were very upset about it after the fact, having realized, you know, what they had just done and who they had just made their sheriff candidate. It's like, look, this isn't my fault. I was upfront about everything. You were the idiot who didn't pay attention. You were the one who trusted in the system so much that you just went in there and voted for whoever was there. That's reckless. That's dangerous. It's insane that this had to happen for people to wake up and realize, you know what? This is actually dangerous. Imagine the kinds of people we're voting for. And it's an argument for anarchism, in my opinion, or at least for state level governments and abolishing the federal government. Do you really want ignorant people in California choosing who the president is going to be based on this revelation that the average voter has no idea whatsoever who they're voting for? Because I don't. I don't want the people over in California to make that sort of decision about who gets to rule over me. I don't want the ignorant here in New Hampshire to make that sort of decision. I don't want anyone to make that sort of decision. But if we're going to have systems in place where people are making these sorts of decisions, can we at least minimize the damage that these people can do? Instead of spreading out across a population of 320 million, can we maybe limit that damage to just 1.5 million or whatever the New Hampshire population is?
Right.
It wouldn't be ideal, but it would be better at the very least.
Right. A lot of people don't realize that, like, the federal government was originally created to help states get along and to protect them from foreign invasion. But now we have federal government that's saying, oh, you can't have weed. Oh, you can't have this and that. Like, they're doing the state's job now, and they're taking over. And because of that, we've got, you know, whatever state you're in, anywhere, any of the 50 states, you are being influenced by laws that should have been passed by your state, but are instead passed by the federal government because of some people in California or New York or Florida or wherever. You're exactly right. This is like, we need to get smaller and more local, and hopefully to the point where it all just disappears.
Government. I don't want an international government, but I could probably be persuaded to accept a state level government if there were no other options, or a county level government. I could probably be persuaded because it's easy to move from one county to another. It's harder to move from one state to another, and it's even harder to move from one nation to another. The more we localize these things, the more options we have. We can look at Merrimack County, and we say, okay, well, here are the things I like about them. We can look at Cheshire County and say, okay, this are the things I like about them. But with the United States, we don't have that option because the federal government is homogenizing everything.
Right. And I think,
illegal across the board in all 50 states. And pot is in this weird gray area right now where they don't really know what to do with it. Some states are legalizing it. The federal government is like, oh, we don't really like this, but we don't know what to do about it. But for the most part, it's the federal government says this thing is illegal, and therefore it's illegal in all 50 states. There's no competition. If states were competing with one another to get us to move there because they had something to offer, that would be an improvement over the current system.
Right, absolutely. I mean, also to the point, it's, you know, I like to have this, I have this utopian fantasy that, like, okay, if you were to completely neuter government and take away all of its ability to steal from people and oppress people, you can have your federal government, but especially anarchists would be like, well, that wouldn't be government, because government by definition is the use of force or violence or something like that, which is true. But okay, so it's not a government, but some people are still calling it a government, but all of the money it raises is voluntary. It doesn't make arbitrary laws and throw people in cages for not following them. This type of whatever it is, I don't see a problem with that. And of course, I don't know. That's when people.
The definition of the government as being an institution that has a monopoly on force in a given territory is incorrect. That's the definition of a state, and a state is a type of government. But it's not the only type, just like a truck isn't the only type of vehicle. You know, you can have vehicles that aren't trucks. You can have governments that aren't states, and there are voluntary ones like IEEE, which is this independent organization that oversees technological growth and establishes protocols and standards and things like that. It's because of IEEE that we can take any cell phone on any mobile carrier created by any company and connect it to any Wi-Fi router, connected to any internet modem and have internet access. It's because of IEEE, but there's no force or violence involved with IEEE's governmenting over the tech industry. They're not out there putting a gun to people saying, hey, you must use this standard or we're going to throw you in a cage. So it is possible to have governments without having a state. If people want to have governments, I'm fine with that as long as it's voluntary in the same way that IEEE is voluntary. It governs the tech industry and there's no violence involved. As long as you use a different standard, they're free to do that. IEEE isn't going to say, oh, no, you can't. So absolutely. I would say a state is a monopoly on force in a given geographic area. But we can't have governments without states.
Right. So, yeah, and something that I've been talking about a lot lately, especially with, you know, all these protests and riots over the police, is that so we got to this point because we have a tyrannical government oppressing people with violence and force and absolutely zero accountability. But what's interesting is that there is a huge distinction between the police and the sheriff, which you're running for, which I think if a lot more people were informed about this, we'd actually be able to say, well, there is more accountability. Because like in police departments, you usually have a chief who is, in most cases, appointed by a mayor. And so the police department is working for the mayor, who basically is working for the businesses that run the city. This is like the private corporatist, the evil capitalist, if you will, police force, versus the sheriff, who is accountable to absolutely nobody except for the people. His only problem, if he doesn't do his job right, is he gets voted out of office. He could still be sued individually and all these other things. But he doesn't have these special protections that that a police department has. And because of that, he has to take his orders from the people, whereas the police chief has to take his orders from the mayor. I think that's an extremely important distinction that a lot of people aren't getting. But I think...
I mean, if the people of Cheshire County happen to elect me, I mean, they will do so knowing exactly what I intend to do, which is police the police. As you pointed out, we are, in fact, distinct from police departments, where sheriff's departments are generally the highest law enforcement officials in a given county. They're the only people who can actually go out and interfere with police investigations and do so legally and arrest the police when they're out of line. We need people who are doing that, and that's literally what the sheriff's department is supposed to be. That's not what it has been, but that's what it's supposed to be.
Absolutely. And it's also interesting that you've talked about de-escalation. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Because that's I mean, you know, people are worried like, oh, you know, don't call the police because if, you know, your neighbors are having a domestic fight, you know, some guy's fighting with his wife, the cops are going to show up, they're going to shoot everybody's dog and, you know, nuke the whole neighborhood. Which is, it's a legitimate concern. I mean, you have like, you know, you have kids who are having a little bit of trouble. They might be, they might have some mental disorder or learning disability. The cops show up, the kid doesn't follow orders, and they shoot him. These are very real things. But when you talk about like conflict de-escalation, that's, do you want to talk about that for a little bit? Because that's, I think that's a huge issue.
And it's important to remind people that, you know, I am a trans person from Mississippi. I've been in some really hairy situations before that, you know, had to be de-escalated or I was probably going to get beaten to death in some dark corner of the rural South. You know? I know how to de-escalate a tense situation. The issue is that the cops, they don't want that. They want to escalate situations at least to the point where they can kidnap someone because then they get more money from them. They can extort them for more money if they're kidnapped. I don't think they really want to escalate it to the point where they're killing people. There probably are some cops who want that. But what the police do is they go out and they find people who are committing harmless choices. Other people would call victimless crimes. It's just someone doing a thing and no one is being hurt by it. They say, hey, no, the state said you can't do that. And then next thing you know, instead of de-escalating it and looking for a peaceful resolution, they escalate it to the point where someone is dead. like Eric Garner, who was selling cigarettes on the streets of New York, or George Floyd, who had a counterfeit 20. These people are dead because of crimes they didn't actually entail victims. That's deplorable. And it's because police don't give a shit about de-escalation. They want to escalate it. They just lose control of that because they are escalating a tense situation. And sometimes they escalate it beyond a point to which they can control it, and it leads to someone's death. They don't want to de-escalate anything. They want to escalate it because that gives them the justification to extract more money from us. And that's what it boils down to, because they know they can't hit us with a 70% tax rate and have us still willingly pay it. Instead, they just say, oh, all of these things, we can fine you for all of these things. And there are so many people out there who believe in the mythology of the state that they will say, okay, well, you broke the law, therefore you were in the wrong, without actually pausing to consider whether or not the law itself was wrong. The law saying that Eric Garner couldn't stand out there selling loose cigarettes was wrong. Not Eric Garner. He broke the law, sure, but he wasn't immoral in so doing. The state was immoral when it made that law in the first place. And police don't care about any of that. All they care about is law and order. This is the law, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to escalate this until that we can extract the maximum amount of money from you, or we might slip up and accidentally kill you.
And do you think this is like... Now, a lot of people call this systematic or systemic, but like, what do you think is, so let's say you get elected, how do you fix this? Is it, do you restructure somehow the motivation of the department? Is it through education and training, or what needs to actually change to make the officers?
Police have to be held accountable. That's all there is to it. Deputies and sheriffs are the only people who can actually go out there and legally do that. They're the only people who can pull over beside an investigation in progress or someone being pulled over and say, hey, officer, leave this peaceful citizen alone. Citizen, go home or do whatever it is you're doing. You're free to go. They're the only people who can do that. Police aren't going to police themselves. You know, the sheriff's department is distinct from police departments for a reason. And they're the highest law enforcement officials within a given county for a reason. It's because that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to protect the people from the municipality police. And that's not what they're doing. Instead, they're cooperating.
Right, but you also do have certain sheriffs, and it varies. And I actually looked at the statistics for this at one point to see, you know, out of, I think there's like 2,000 people who get killed by the police every year. How many of them were by police and how many were by sheriffs? And it was, if I recall, it was almost 50-50. So I know there's a lot of, and you hear stories all the time about corrupt sheriff's departments and everything else. Sure. But some of those officers still have the same objective. So do you think it's enough to say, okay, look, these are the new rules, and anyone who breaks those rules, to fire them or to arrest them and charge them with a crime? Or is it, you know, do they need some sort of training to learn? Because I think it is a skill to be able to de-escalate things. You know, it's especially for somebody who's grown up through, you know, not having to do that and never have, you know, just getting away with escalating all the time. That's a skill they have to learn.
It is a skill they have to learn. That there would definitely be some level of training involved in how to properly de-escalate, you know, complicated and complex and dangerous situations. That's certainly a skill. And it's certainly something they should be taught, but that's not what they're taught right now. And police boot camp, police training, whatever you want to call it, police academies, they're not about that at all. They're all about loyalty to your fellow police officers. It's about separating us from them. And the sheriff's departments are supposed to be us, right? So, okay, I will allow you that police officers are supposed to be these militaristic style us and them, ready to pull a gun and shoot me in the head because they think I'm the enemy type of people. I will acquiesce that. However, we're supposed to have a counter to that that is above them and that keeps them in check.
Interesting. Okay, so...
we'll probably be involved.
Right. So I want to talk about something that's... It's always kind of fun for me. And I know it's always kind of controversial for everybody else. Satanism. This is really interesting because I think, you know, growing up, I would hear about that stuff, and you hear about like satanic cults and like sacrifices and like all this really weird shit. But then I actually met and talked to some Satanists, and I was like, you guys are actually really cool. You're actually very nonviolent. You're very non-aggressive people. You're very peaceful people. You're libertarian. The religion itself, if that's what you can call it, is very peaceful, very much in line with libertarianism and anarchism. How would you describe it?
Do as thou wilt, but harm none. I mean, that's the most important tenet of Satanism. It's all about, you know, disobeying, or not disobeying. It's all about rebelling against the God of the day. And the God of the day here in Earth in the year 2020 is the state. Everyone worships the state. They have their flags. They have their idols. They have their religious idolatry. They have everything. It's definitely a religious. So what would a religion of today actually be opposed against? Or what would a Satanist be opposed against if they're opposing the guide of the day? And that's the state. Unfortunately, most Satanists don't agree because they've been so infected with secular humanism that they think, oh no, we can use the state to meet our needs of creating a better society for everyone. They are convinced that they can achieve a moral end through immoral actions. Like you have the Church of Satan that sued the IRS for a 501c3 status. They finally won it. And then they went on to say, oh, well, we proudly pay our taxes because, you know, they buy into the mythology. They buy into the religion that their taxes are somehow going to roads and schools and fire departments and all of that nonsense, but they're not. You are paying for the federal government to drop bombs on Doctors Without Borders hospitals and weddings. And you dare stand there and say that you're doing this proudly? You immoral piece of crap, get out of my sight. You're an evil monster and I oppose you.
Wow, that's interesting. So there are, because I see the Church of Satan coming up, and are these the same guys that I think they sued to get a statue or they just went and put a statue in place?
That was the Temple of Satan. And I support their First Amendment positions. I agree with them on that. But when they come to a point where they're like, we probably pay our taxes, that's where I'd diverge from them.
Right.
Because the only solution is to pay as little in taxes as possible.
Right. Yeah, that's my position. But that's interesting. So there's almost like, and anybody listening who is a Christian, forgive my complete ignorance because I'm not. But there are like different churches, and I know they have like variations on you know how they see things and the rules they follow and things like that. Is Satanism kind of broken up that same way?
There are differences between the Church of Satan, the Satanic Temple, and the Reformed Satanic Church, which is the one that I'm part of. So there are definitely, I guess, denominations within Satanism. And mine is most pro-liberty, anti-authoritarian among them. I mean, we advocate for people to use Bitcoin so that they can avoid paying taxes, so that they don't fund the war machine. It's hard to get more libertarian than that.
Right. What's the...
None of these organizations I just cited actually promote the idea that Satan is an entity that exists. That's not what it's about. It's about the mythology behind it and the symbolism behind it. It's about resisting authority and saying, hey, you're trying to tell me what to do. Why? Why should I listen to you? And, you know, gods of Christianity and gods of all religions, they say, because I said so. Just like the state says, because I said so. Why shouldn't I be able to sell loose cigarettes on the streets of New York without you killing me? And they say, because I say so. You're like, okay, but I don't consent to that. I don't obey. And what do? They kill you. And what does the Christian God do? He kills them. Satanism is opposed to all of that. It's about, okay, people should be free to make choices where other human beings aren't being harmed.
Right. And it's really interesting too, because I'm looking up the etymology of the word Satan. And just like you said, so it comes from Hebrew.
It means adversary.
Yeah. Which is really interesting because, I mean, that's exactly what you're saying. And as libertarians or anarchists or voluntarists, we are all adversaries of the state. Adversaries of injustice and things like this. And what was really interesting, I was listening to some like total like wacky conspiracy theory podcasts, but it was really interesting because they actually went, so Satan and Lucifer are usually from they're basically identified as the same thing to most people. They're the devil, right? But they were explaining the etymology of Lucifer, which is the light shower, which is like basically the revealer of truth, which I thought was really interesting when they said that, because it's, you know, why would a church teach to hate somebody who is showing the truth? And then I started thinking back to the Anabaptists, who were basically fighting this church taking over, you know, who wanted to be the government, and they were fighting against this. And they were the church was essentially baptizing people so that they could keep a ledger of everybody, so they were able to tax them, ironically. And so
you got to look to Greek mythology, because the story of Lucifer is identical to the story of Prometheus in Greek mythology. Prometheus brought human beings fire so that they weren't dependent on the gods, and the gods were really pissed off about that. Lucifer brought humanity the knowledge of good and evil, so that they weren't reliant on Yahweh, and Yahweh got really pissed off about that. Yahweh wanted us, in the biblical tradition, he wanted us to be unthinking robots who just did whatever he said because he was the authority and we were supposed to obey. And Lucifer came along and said, hey, that's not correct. Eat the fruit of this tree and you will understand that. Just like Prometheus came along and said, hey, you don't actually have to be dependent. You can think for yourselves, or you can exist for yourselves. You can be free of your dependency of them. You can be independent. So it's far larger, this whole authoritarianism streak. It's far larger than just one religion or just Satan. It's everywhere throughout all of religions throughout human history. We're told across the board that we have to obey the authority because the authority is the one who is in charge and they said so, and it's morally right to obey them. Christianity, religion, they're just the ways that these are taught to us insidiously without our knowledge. And it then becomes, oh, well, you have to stop at that stop sign because it's immoral if you don't, because the state said you have to stop at that stop sign. So the state just morphed into the God that everyone worships today. We just replace Zeus with the state or with the government or with whatever terminology you want. And it's the same thing. You have to obey Zeus because Zeus said so. And you have to obey the state because the state says so. Okay, but why? Why is it wrong for me to run the stop sign? It's 3 o'clock in the morning, no one around. Why is it morally wrong? Explain to me why I have to follow your edicts. If you want me to actually follow you, you should be able to explain that and justify your positions. If you can't do that, you're just a tyrant, and I'm not going to obey.
Right. And I mean, that's really interesting too, because a lot of this plays into the, you know, the apple of knowledge and all this other stuff. And this goes right back to where we started out about people being completely uninformed about who they're voting for, but the people in charge being completely content with that, because as long as they're in charge, the uninformed voters are going to continue to support them, and they're going to continue to play into this mythology of the state. Of, you know, we voted and we have rules, so we have to follow the rules. If you don't like them, vote. And we're not even voting on the rules, but somehow they imagine a connection there.
Yeah, just like Yahweh, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Mike Pence, none of these people want us thinking for ourselves, because that's a danger to them. They want us to be dependent on them. They want to be able to tell us what to think and have us listen and trust them and believe that they're right because they're the ones in charge. They're the authorities. Us being able to actually think for ourselves and challenge them is a threat to them, because we realize almost immediately that we have no need for them whatsoever. That they're literally just people standing around saying, thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that. Okay, but we weren't going to kill anyone anyway. It wasn't really necessary for you to say, thou shalt not murder, right? And that's all right. They are. They presume themselves to be gods.
And that's really interesting too, because that, like, you know, you hear this all the time from, like, well, but without the government, if there weren't any rules, people would just go around killing everybody. And, like, but it's to that, that's... to that exact point. It's like, wait, really? Would you? Are you not killing me right now while we're having this conversation because there's a law and you're worried the police are going to come get you? Is that why?
there are some people out there who would commit murder if there were no consequences whatsoever. But we, even without the state, we're never going to live in a world where there are no consequences whatsoever to human life.
The consequences are social or direct from somebody who sees you doing it. And they're like, no, that's not right. And they're going to go stop you and probably kill you in the process.
Very rarely. And this is psychologically sound. We know that, you know, punishing bad behavior, it doesn't tend to change a person's behavior. Instead, you need to reward good behavior. So we know that punishment isn't necessarily a deterrent for most people. I'm sure there's some people out there for whom it is a deterrent. But for most people, we're not going to murder whether it's legal or not because we're moral beings. A person's own inner sense of morality has to break down before they're willing to kill someone else. And once that breaks down, they're probably not going to refrain from doing it because it's illegal, because it was never about the legality of it. It was about their own moral center and them just recognizing that, hey, you know what? It's wrong to kill other people.
Right.
Once that breaks down in a person, the state isn't going to be able to save us from it. Nothing can other than self-defense.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, this is really interesting. I'd love to keep talking, but I know you've got a million interviews to get to because you're super popular right now, which is totally awesome. And I want to wish you the best of luck. But if somebody's listening and they're in New Hampshire, they want to vote for you, they want to help you out, make a donation, or learn more about you, where can they go?
EFFpolice.com, EFFpolice.com. That's my campaign site. And they can find links to all of my social media and all of everything I do is currently right there. EFFpolice.com.
EFFpolice.com. Nice. Yeah. Awesome. And what is there anything specifically you're looking for on your campaign? Volunteers or door knockers? Anything specific you're looking for?
Door knockers would be great. Of course, that's the hardest thing to get people to do. But I mean, I would love for people to go around to anyone with a Biden-Harris sign in their yard, knock on their door and ask them if they're going to vote for the trans sheriff candidate. Because I imagine the answer could be persuaded to be yes.
That's actually a really interesting point that You can tell what people's political bias is by the signs they put out in front of their house.
They're really going to support center-right Eli Rivera over the hard-left trans sickness anarchist. I don't think they would. But I don't have time to be out right now. So, but you know, time will tell. We'll see.
Awesome. Well, Ari, it's been amazing talking to you. Hopefully I'll get to have you back on again sometime. Hopefully you win this election. That would be really amazing. And guys, if you're listening to the show, if you like what you heard today, please make sure to share this live stream, like and comment and do all that fun stuff. If you're listening to this on the podcast or if you want to listen to this on the podcast, make sure you go and subscribe. It's available where all of your favorite podcasts are. And I will see you guys next time. Taxation is theft.